Oh, shit, that reminds me. I need to ask you an important question, Gladys.
Go for it.
Who in Lord of the Rings is a horse?
Oh, hadn't thought about that. Legolas definitely gives me horse vibes.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Bite Marks, a podcast by gamers for gamers about politics. My name's Callum. I am the last of his first with a bit of middle in between. And joining us today is my lovely my pronouns are he, him. And joining us today is my lovely co-host, Emilio.
Howdy, everybody. Pronouns he, him.
And a very special guest, Lord Glimbus himself.
Oh, you think I'm special, do you?
Yeah, with three Ks.
Hello, I indeed am Glimbus. He's cool, they's cool, a little bit of whatever.
Cool. Yeah. Today, what are we talking about, Emilio?
So if Glimbus's dulcet tones are with us, then you got to know that we're going to be talking about Game of Thrones, Song of Ice and Fire. But, do we have everybody. To?
Yeah.
We have a...
It's in your contract. Don't make me shoot.
We're going to be talking about not just that, but Game of Thrones against or versus Lord of the Rings. Woo! Everyone loves a good comparison.
It's the real Superman versus Goku of fantasy books.
Yeah, which one is Goku?
He's the spiky-haired Japanese one.
Hang on. I think in the analogy, Game of Thrones has to be Goku because Superman came first and, like, it's just... and you can definitely see the Superman influence on Goku.
Yeah, and also there's a lot more screaming in Game of Thrones. And power levels are kind of bullshit in Season 8.
True.
Yeah, and fast travel is basically just kind of all over the place. You know,
remember someone's riding a cloud. The beam struggle between Arya and the Night King.
It took us 5 seconds to start... It took us 5 seconds to start dunking on Season 8, and we're not even talking about the show.
Remember when Euron powered up for 20 episodes straight?
Yeah, and then he came through with 1,000 boats. He did basically just fucking death beam one of the dragons, though. Destructo disced Daenerys' dragons.
Nani?
Okay, look, have you seen the Japanese dub of Game of Thrones? It's pretty good, all right?
I've seen bits of it.
Yeah, it's pretty good. It's like the Japanese dub of Star Wars. You gotta watch it, especially the prequel one. Yeah, so we're here because I had a wild thought, because I was watching a Glidus video, I think the one with Alt-Shift-X, or Alt-Shift-X, I can't remember.
I've never spoken with Alt-Shift-X in my life.
Gotcha, so the other guy. Yeah. And... He had brought up a point about Ashai, or maybe it was you, that was, you know, like, maybe that place is, like, a nuclear wasteland. And that got me thinking about, like, technology in A Song of Ice and Fire. And I was also thinking about Lord of the Rings at that time. And I thought it would be a really interesting idea, because I haven't really seen people talk about this. Basically, let's talk about industrialization as a theme in those two big works. In Lord of the Rings, which is a big influence on Tolkien. It's Lord of the Rings...
It was a big influence on Tolkien. It was an enormous
really
one. Especially
his life, you could say.
Especially, my dad shared with me like an article recently about how even though Tolkien's dead, he's earned like $9 million this year. From
Jesus
book
Christ.
Sales, yeah. Dead man is earning more money than me.
Copyright really is a broken system.
I mean, his kids are benefiting forever.
Forget the rings of power. The copyright law is like the ultimate evil.
One law to bind them all.
I mean, it kind of fits, you know, with the whole Jeff Bezos thing. And our society is pretty wacky.
We live in wacky times.
Just silly little rascally times. Just a privilege, am I right?
Yeah, anyway, we're all the what's his name? The fish guy.
From Hitchhikers.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. All right. So, industrialization. So these two works, Lord of the Rings and Game of Thrones, are basically the two big titans in fantasy. One is obviously a direct inspiration from the other. And they both, in my opinion, handle the theme of industrialization in very different but somewhat similar ways. So, Callum, do you want to start with Lord of the Rings or Game of Thrones?
I feel like we should start with Lord of the Rings because it's kind of easier. It's more of a one-to-one comparison.
Yeah, got
it. Okay. Yeah, and I think so, it's more coherent to go chronologically.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. So basically, if you do a reading of Tolkien's works, he really loves trees.
horny man, for trees.
Man really loves him some trees.
When the Ents are wondering where the Ent wives went, they went to John. They're hanging out with John.
Why do you think the book's set in New Zealand? That's where John lives.
Yeah.
I wonder if he ever went. That'd be interesting.
If he ever went to New Zealand.
Yeah.
He lived there. I believe he lived there in his later life.
Did he?
Yeah, awesome. I think he fought in the war and he moved to New Zealand.
As one does.
Yeah.
You know, when you...
That's the natural course of a man's life, Emilio. You fight a war.
You almost get obliterated.
You become friends with a Christian, and then you move to New Zealand.
Raise some sheep, I guess.
It's archetypical. Jung wrote about this.
No. It's the collective unconscious. But
I knew you were the right...
It's an archetype you see play out across dozens of mythologies across the world.
Why does Carl Jung sing like Kermit?
It was Jordan Peterson.
Oh, so it was Kermit. Cool.
Yeah.
That's a great impression.
Yeah. I knew...
Thank you.
Gladys is definitely the right Game of Thrones person to have on for this. We're already off the rails.
Jump hop us back onto the rails for a second. Can I float a crazy theory?
Yeah, go ahead.
Mordor is a factory and Mount Doom is a smokestack.
I think that's a pretty decent reading. I don't know if Tolkien ever intended these one-to-one allegorical comparisons. I think he went on the record later in life to say, no, there's no direct allegories going on here. But, I mean, the man lived a life and he thought ideas, and those ideas are certainly in his work.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Callum.
Thank you. A friend of mine actually I have a friend who's super into Lord of the Rings, like crazy into it. And he did like a 50 WhatsApp status rant about, it was Rings of Power. And he went through Tolkien's like entire life. And the first story Tolkien ever wrote was about like an elf giving up her immortality to be with a man. And it was based on...
His own wife, Beren Luthien.
Great
love story.
It was based on his own wife, but it was also based on something from the Bible. And that's why, like, the main head god of Lord of the Rings is so very much like the Christian god. So there are definitely allegories.
I think it's impossible to actually really make something and not have people at least partially think it's allegorical. Yeah. I mean, like, Gladys... Obviously, your videos are allegorical, right?
Yes.
Of the Last Supper.
Exactly. If you watch a...
They're a strict one-to-one allegory to something, but they'll never tell you what it is.
A mysterious third thing that's worse.
I'll argue about it in the comments about what Gladys is actually allegorical to. But, you know, it's very obvious to any kind of reading that... Tolkien is very much against the idea that industrialization is good, right? So I can think of so many examples, right? The bad ending for the Shire is the Shire becoming industrialized.
Yeah.
You've got the Ents marching on Isengard and toppling over what is explicitly like a factory, you know, the industrial production of Isengard. Mm-hmm. You've got Mordor, obviously, as Callum brought up. One thing that I found is kind of interesting, of course, is that even though Tolkien has this idea that industrialization is kind of a bad thing, He also kind of points out that, well, he also suggests that, like, earlier people's technology was more advanced, and the earlier civilizations in Middle Earth, like the Numenoreans and the Elves in, like, the First and Second Ages, they must have had, like, huge industrial capacity, but they don't necessarily seem to be depicted in the same way. Why do you think that is?
Well, I...
Is that open to the floor? Or... Oh, sorry, Cal.
Here's the amazing thing about this podcast is all questions are open to the floor and we never actually have to answer anything. You can talk...
Oh, fantastic. We could have just left him on red.
Yeah, you can talk around an issue forever. We can go off to a different topic if you want. Okay. But I will say that a lot of the old... While a lot of the old cultures do definitely have, like, advanced technology, they also have a tendency to fail. Like, Numenor fell because the king got greedy, I think it was. He, like...
Jealous.
Yeah.
They got jealous of the...
Of the elves.
Immortality of the elves.
Yeah, yeah. So then it fell. It got struck down because they tried to sail to the land of the gods where the elves could go. The Elvish Society during the Third Age, they're basically dying out and they're all going to the Undying Lands. The only societies that, like, aren't... The only society that isn't affected is the Shire, which is the least industrialized place in the world.
Yep.
Yeah, it's interesting because on the one hand, so one thing that I think is very important to understand Tolkien is that unlike Martin, who actually feels like his battles and things like that have to make sense, there's no military way that the War of the Ring was possible for the free peoples to win. There's no way that they could have beaten Mordor in terms of the numbers of Uruk-hai and stuff like that.
Yeah,
so the only way that they could have... And the tech tree. Yeah, if Sauron had, like, two more turns, he would have, like, unlocked musketry.
He was so close to nukes. It was insane. But then Gandhi came in. It was a whole thing.
Yeah. Because obviously there's no way that they could have won a conventional battle, and everyone kind of knows that. So they basically have to win by time for Frodo to do the thing and undo all the magic and stuff like that.
Although they did have ghosts, Emilio.
Yeah, but, like, you know, think about what Aragorn does with the Army of the Dead. He uses them to stop one fleet of ships, and then he gives them up. Because, like, imagine, you know, picture this. Imagine if George R. R. Martin wrote that scene. Aragorn would have, like, a Littlefinger-style plot to make sure that the Army of Dead was permanently in his employ, because he'd use some crazy word trickery to make sure that their oaths would never be fulfilled, right? And then he would rub his hands together and, I don't know...
twirl his mustache, yeah. And then groom a girl.
I mean, but to be fair, I think Aragorn was kind of being groomed, because the elf woman... Arwen is so much older than him.
Yeah. That is...
Yeah. Yeah. Think about it for a sec. And also, I don't think Aragorn's going to be a good king, because he had an undying, unstoppable army.
But it says in the book that he was.
But,
yeah.
I mean, have we considered that maybe there's an unreliable narrator?
A little bit of authorial bias, perhaps. Plot armor. One of my favorite fun facts about Lord of the Rings is that Aragorn technically is marrying up with Arwen. And the reason why the Gondorian kingdom doesn't have a financial crisis after all of this is because by marrying Arwen, he gets her dowry, which is, like, all of the money.
All of Rivendell. He melts Rivendell down.
It's like stabilizes the Gondorian economy after, like, the world-ending war. And I that's just really funny to me, because that's kind of a nonsense solution, you know, because in real life that would have just caused hyperinflation. But it seems like Tolkien has this idea that industrialization is bad. It is kind of interesting, of course, that technology, there's, like, a divide between good uses of technology, because, like, the elves in the Second Age, they have, like, flying ships and stuff like that. That's obviously, you know, crazy levels of technology, but they don't necessarily destroy the world.
Wait, they had flying ships?
Yeah.
Final Fantasy
Elrond's
style.
No. Elrond's father is in space on a ship.
What?
And that's a star.
The elves had a space program? What the
yeah,
fuck?
Lord of the Rings lore. Yeah.
And in the Second Age, Elrond's dad said, "One small step for elves, one giant step for elvenkind."
Yeah, it's pretty funny how the like magic in Lord of the Rings is really actually just like magic, you know. Yep. The funny thing is one of the major differences between those two pieces of work is that in Martin's world, magic is always like a bad thing. It always has an immense price. It's always a thing that you've got to be really careful with. And meanwhile, even though magic is, you know, I feel like Tolkien's a little bit more flippant with the ways in which magic manifests, like a flying ship, you know, elven immortality, all of this other crazy stuff. It's a bit wacky.
Mithril.
I can summon a waterfall to save my friends. That's fine, whatever. It's like yeah, the DM is just saying, yeah, fuck it, whatever.
Oh, you got a 20? You tell me what happened.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I'm kind of particular. I'm very jazzed by the idea of like an alternative universe where Tolkien was just like a D&D player and he made Lord of the Rings based on like a really long session of D&D that he was playing.
Isn't that basically what The Expanse is?
Ooh.
I don't know what that is.
Oh. Yeah, that cuts deep. You don't know the Oh, well, you don't watch much sci-fi.
Well, I just...
Which is...
Emilio, if I can't...
Oh, if you don't know, Emilio, that is true. That it is a Stars Without Number game that they turned into a, like, novel.
Yeah. Yeah.
They were tabletop gaming and thought, hey, this is pretty good, actually.
I mean, yeah, because I've got a book on my shelf right now, the Dragonlance series, which was literally just the D&D campaign.
Yeah.
And then they wrote it.
George R. R. Martin definitely played his share of tabletop as well.
The man's a hippie. He's obviously played. Yeah, he's got like a favorite D20. Let's not delude ourselves here, right?
It's like, oh God! I'm imagining a news story from like 10 years from now of someone has broken into George R. R. Martin's home and stolen his favorite dice.
No.
And that's why the Winds of Winter got postponed for another.
We're all gonna drag ourselves into an early grave waiting for that book. I swear.
That's the only reason I've kept going.
Maybe Tolkien was...
Like, I should have been gone from this world a long time ago. I'm not a healthy person. I almost got struck by lightning once. Like, God is sending some pretty clear messages. The only reason I'm here is to see the Winds of Winter. So take as long as you want, George.
The only thing keeping him alive, like, as soon as he publishes that book, he's dropping dead.
He just disintegrates like Thanos snapped.
Oh, yeah. Is it like his phylactery, you know? Like a lich's phylactery? He's got his soul. Yeah. In an unfinished draft.
Fucking Horcrux.
That said, I don't like how much of the fan discourse is centered around the man's death. I like that. That leaves a sour taste in my mouth.
Yeah, just let George kind of live his life.
Yeah,
he's doing his stuff.
It's,
like
absolutely. It's like every time you bring up a conversation about how like what will happen in the Winds of Winter, right? People like to talk about this a lot. Every time you do this in the public setting, someone crawls out of the woodwork to say, it'll never come out, it's going to die. And it's like, fuck you. You didn't need to say that.
Yeah.
We know how old he is. We've all seen how fat he is. You don't need to say it. He's just let him go.
He is remarkably, like, healthy sounding.
Yeah.
For a man his age. He's doing good.
Like, he caught COVID, and it seems that he had a better run of it than I've been doing.
Yeah, it is kind of funny how a lot of very famous authors, they died, and then their stuff got famous. Like, Tolkien wasn't famous in his lifetime, you know, really, relative to what George is dealing with right now. Because I feel Because if, like, Tolkien were dealing with George's level of fame, I feel like he would have just, like, literally just gone into the woods and we would have never heard from him again.
Yeah. He would have, oh, what's the guy? What's that guy who did that?
Tom Bombadil?
Fuck, why did I bring it up? Oh. Tom Bombadil.
You mean a real Bombadil person?
Himself. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, Ernest Hemingway?
Sure, he'll do.
Like, no, so many writers did this.
Well, maybe he would have done that.
Lord Byron.
Yeah, no, he's...
I don't know.
It's like a modern guy. Whatever.
Philfish.
Yeah.
When he left Twitter because people kept bugging him about releasing Fez 2.
Based.
Philfish, the Tolkien of our era.
Leaving Twitter is always the correct thing to do.
Yeah.
You're welcome, world, for Elon destroying it.
You can't return them. You can't return them.
But
stop asking. You can't.
Pretoria does not need Elon Musk right now.
Pretoria needs so much more, dude. Like, it's rough here. There are bars that I've been to where, like, my friends have had their teeth punched out by bouncers. It is rough here. We have designated bars you can go to if you wish to be stabbed.
Ooh.
The nightlife in South Africa is pretty rowdy. I'm not sure if you're into a lot of partying, Clytus.
Me, I'm at one right now.
Oh, that's very sweet of you to take a break from your party to talk to us about Lord of the Rings for a bit.
You're in the cupboard.
You called your mom an hour ago.
You can hear that in the background. That's just... I had to shoo a couple away earlier who wanted to fuck in here.
Yeah, fair enough. You had more important things to do.
Yeah. Excuse me. I need to talk about industrialization in fantasy series.
I think you know where this is going.
To bring it back. So, now, I think, the evidence is pretty laid out. Tolkien, basically, his ideal state of being is to have loads of people just living in these small little villages. Everyone's smoking pipe weed and kind of maybe being nobles and, quote-unquote, living with, like, an underclass who's supporting them, quote-unquote. I don't know. You know,
did the hobbits have an underclass? How short were they?
Bilbo.
It's like a Russian nesting doll.
Some hobbits.
You get the hobbits and the hibbits. And then the shit hobbits. People.
Well, the worms, the dirt.
So one of the more problematic, I guess, quote-unquote problematic, if you were really going to spill the tea, is that, like, Sam is technically Frodo's servant.
Yeah, right? He's his gardener.
So it's like some hobbits are nobles in the sense that they don't have any jobs. They're just wealthy, and they have the ability to do whatever they want.
Yeah,
they,
you know, Frodo is a literal trust fund kid because Frodo robbed a dragon.
Fuck. Yeah, and they killed that dragon, so you can't go do that anymore.
They murdered a dragon, stole from some dwarves, and now Frodo has a trust fund.
Yeah.
Did they extort the dragon's labor? Because the dragon accumulated that wealth. Like, it went out, it went and did things and got that wealth. That's funny, because dragons are typically a symbol of hoarding wealth, of, like...
of laziness. Know, This is a very motivated dragon.
He was a laborer. He was a worker. He was unionized. And Bilbo came along and just...
gutted him. But, like, this is what I'm saying. Unreliable narrator. The dwarves were the bad guys. That wasn't even their mountain.
We're breaking you... Oh, wait, hang on.
That wasn't their mountain.
I don't know if we have time for this.
Oh, yeah, you know.
Get out your shiniest pieces of tinfoil. We're going in deep.
Okay, so the Tolkien fans are going to be very angry with us, but to talk about Game of Thrones. So George R. R. Martin is obviously much more interested in political questions in his stories than he is in... wider narratives. I mean, obviously, there are, like, his central thesis is, like, monarchy bad, you know, and that's a message that lots of people in the fans don't seem to understand, right?
Monarchy good? No, monarchy bad. So monarchy hot.
But what if monarch hot woman?
But what if creepy uncle were king?
Yeah, that's literally
would
what
monarchy be good if cool young kid.
Guys, when I am chairman, when I am throne boy,
it'll be good. Don't worry.
The funniest moment in Game of Thrones for me is, it at least in the show, is when Sam suggests they do democracy and everyone just laughs at him. You know,
including Yara, who comes from a place where
with the democracy.
Yeah.
Voting? What horse shit is like, this?
What are you talking about? That won't fucking work.
Yeah. But so Martin has like, okay, so the genesis of this idea was talking about like a shy. So I think the best example of industrialization as like a nexus point, because it isn't really that prevalent, and we'll talk about that in more detail, is a shy, right? And maybe to another extent, Valyria, right? Because the Dragon Lords have a massive city. It's covered in volcanoes. Presumably they're doing lots of magic. And I guess in this context, magic is kind of a symbol for industrialization. Because how they do it is sacrifice. They've got slaves. They have loads of slaves in mines and things like that, and they build this massive empire, and it all comes crumbling down. Mm-hmm. Do you think... So, like, that's really, to my mind, the only real example of where I see in a case of, like, technology leads to the downfall of a civilization, right?
Okay, interesting. So, you spoke about how you thought of, well, I or Alt Swift X, I can't remember, spoke about how
one of those guys,
yeah, one of them,
one of those cheeky chaps, about
how a shy felt like a nuclear post-apocalyptic wasteland. And since then, I think in one of my own streams that I did like without him, I talked about how Westeros is actually canonically post-apocalyptic.
Yeah,
because the Long Night, no matter how you cut it, was an apocalypse.
And Essos is also post-apocalyptic.
Yes, there's a prominent theorist in our circles, Preston Jacobs, who goes on about what kind of apocalypse that might have been. David Lightbringer also talks about it. So Preston's idea is that it could have actually been a nuclear apocalypse, like it's a nuclear winter, the Long Night.
What would the Azor Ahai be? Like,
don't worry about the specifics of like the actual war for the Dawn.
Azor Ahai,
just like the Long Night was a nuclear winter. And like, you know, when it's a mythological medieval society that's going to come up with stories about how they got through a certain period of time, right? So it's entirely possible that Azor Ahai, Lightbringer, Prince that was promised, it's all bullshit.
They were iodine pills.
Yeah.
to survive the radiation.
David Lightbringer has an idea where the apocalypse was caused by a moon, a secondary like moon crashing into Westeros.
A Majora's Mask situation.
Yeah, and it like shot up a shit ton of debris that blanketed the atmosphere, and so that was the 30-year winter or whatever. Westeros, and then after that, you have the construction of the Wall, Storm's End, the Eyrie, Casterly Rock, all of these ridiculously lavish, technologically advanced structures that the society we see in A Song of Ice and Fire absolutely would not be able to construct. The castles that society produces are King's Landing. Harrenhal's a really big place, but it's made of stone. It's just like big towers. There's nothing entirely remarkable about it. It's just a huge vanity project, like the Wall City in Saudi Arabia. Sorry, I have COVID.
No worries, I've been coughing all video.
Yeah, so there's a huge dichotomy between the structures that the society of the past could produce in Westeros and the structures that the society of the present can produce, right? So you definitely see a degradation of technology, and you have to wonder, like, what happened to that technology? So it's said in the legends that Bran the Builder had help from the Children of the Forest. Maesters are like, we don't know if this actually happened, but, you know, people say it. When he built the Wall and Storm's End. So magic being equated to technology to create vastly superior technologically advanced structures. There you go. That's something.
Well, I mean,
that's a very interesting point. Go ahead, Gal.
I was going to say the reason that people might not like understand how that happened or know why it happened is we know that the Maesters are controlling information. Like there is books you can't take out unless you are a Grand Maester. So it's entirely possible that there are books that they just don't understand. And so that they've restricted them to be like, oh no, No one can see this because it's
yeah,
blasphemous, or whatever.
I think of how societies in medieval Europe, like England, for example, looked at the structures built by the Romans and were like, I have no fucking clue how they did that.
Yeah.
And how, like, modern day, like, we look at Stonehenge and the pyramids and we're like, how the fuck did they do that?
Well, we tend to do that only when it's brown people, you
yes.
know.
aliens did it. It couldn't possibly have been actual Africans.
Wait, was Stonehenge invented by brown people? What a sentence to be on the internet forever.
Stonehenge is the rare exception of an ancient alien theory where the subject of the fixation was something that was invented by Europeans. Although, but generally speaking, the ancient... Yeah,
they were primitive Celts, right? Yeah. Like they're not upstanding, advanced
Anglo-Saxons.
Yeah,
Christian folk.
They're fucking Irish. I think that's where it comes from.
That's what Lovecraft was trying to tell us.
Oh, fuck me.
God. Speaking of, a cat did just appear at my window. A cat I don't own. So maybe Lovecraft heard us talking shit, and now we're about to find out. No.
Ask the cat what its name is.
I can't.
Oh, no.
It looked at me dead in my eyes and then left.
How do we know the cat... It warged into you, you know? Maybe someone was warging into the cat and they...
Thank you for watching my last episode of Bite Marks, because apparently I'm cursed.
Yeah, so to pick up on that theme of, like, fallen civilization. So, like, that happens actually in Lord of the Rings. There are several... examples of civilizations of elements of the previous, like, Numenorean civilization. Like, for example, there's a city called Tharband, which is up in the north, and the Dunedain, right, that used to be one of the major Arnorian cities, and they really want to try and rebuild it, but they're so busy fighting Angmar and all those other guys that they really don't have the ability to actually rebuild this massive city. And, you know, there are places like Umbar, which have these incredible ports, and in Tolkien's mind, those things are explainable in the sense that we get an understanding of where they came from, because we see the intervening period. The issue with Game of Thrones is that we don't really know concretely what happened in the before times. It's all just myth and legend.
I think it's kept, like, purposefully mystical. George doesn't want us to know, either for the like, he loves mystery, obviously. And he thinks that casting a shadow over the history makes it way more interesting, which he's right about. And also, he might be holding on to something for narrative purposes, because he's not done yet.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure I'd want to find out the history of, like, exactly what happened to...
Oh, yeah. So there's this oily black stone that keeps popping up across the world of Westeros, and people go nuts theorizing where it came from and what it means. It's kind of like the ancient aliens theories of, like, the modern world, but it's a lot less racist.
That's the one with the fish people, right?
They the pop up in some of the theories, but then there's the Great Empire of the Dawn, which is this, like, let's not get into it, but it's like this ancient civilization that spanned the world pre-Valyria, pre-Long Night, and they're the ones that put all this shit here, and that's why the Danes and the High Towers kind of look Valyrian, when historically there'd actually be absolutely no way that they could look Valyrian.
Could be.
That's basically it.
That's Sothorius? Like the black city in Sothorius?
Yeah, that's right. And if George explains, like, gives a concrete answer for where the black oily stone comes from, I'm going to be furious.
Yeah, the world will, like, burn. There will never be an answer good enough.
Yeah.
You know, I kind of have to wonder if, like, part of this is almost like a rejection of the Tolkien style, because Tolkien wanted to explain everything.
If he had been
immortal, I feel like he would have just kept writing, and he would have just kept writing more and more details.
You know how George complains about Aragorn's tax code? It's like, well, maybe if Tolkien had lived long enough, we would have got there.
He would have explained it.
Yeah.
Just like sheets and sheets and sheets of the tax brackets you fall into.
Oh my god, it's a D&D player's dream.
Yeah.
You know, funnily enough, about that tax code thing, the reason why I know that Arwen's dowry saves Gondor is because I know that after I actually wanted to know why, what would the answer to that question be? And I went and looked, you know, and I found some people talking about it. It turns out that, yeah, Gondor doesn't really have taxes in the way that we think of taxes. And it was just because Arwen was incredibly wealthy. And her money just kept the kingdom afloat for like hundreds of years. So
Wait.
I didn't know that Arwen had money.
How do they feed
money?
Their people? Like, just having money doesn't mean you can access...
Yeah, so
where does the food come from?
So the peasants would just grow their own food. And Aragorn would basically finance like large-scale infrastructural projects out of the treasury of the kingdom. And people would just pay... They would just do commerce and stuff like that, but they never actually had to tax people. They didn't actually have to do widespread taxation.
So they, like,
to the peasants.
They paid the peasantry for their food?
Yeah.
Oh my god. Is
Aragorn,
this canon?
Aragorn was a good king. Holy shit.
Is this actually canon? Like, did Tolkien write this?
So there's some of this information comes from the unfinished sequel to The Lord of the Rings, which was actually very similar to like a Game of Thrones type book, because it was about human politics and like a cult worshipping Sauron, I believe, or Melkor. And he never finished it because he decided that that was a boring story that he didn't want to tell.
Oh,
and
shit.
Came along.
Get fucking cucked, George. From beyond the grave.
God, Tolkien is such a Chad. Holy shit.
I love it when authors do that. It's like there's this book by Nietzsche called Beyond Good and Evil, where he spends a good portion of it just dunking on other philosophers. He's just like, Stoics, you fucking morons, you're rejecting nature by pretending to be like nature. And it's like, damn, Nietzsche, tell me about it.
Go off, King.
Yeah. Slay.
Tolkien was approached many times to write that book, and he just decided that he didn't want to, and he thought it would be boring, and so he didn't. And
cool.
I respect him.
Oh my god.
Wow.
Can you imagine if George was like, you know, a song of Winds of Winter and A Dream of Summer, that's kind of a boring story. I don't really want to tell it. I'm out. And then he just pieces.
And then he just writes like that... Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas again.
Yeah. Yeah, or maybe he writes an entirely new series. About, I don't know, what would you write about? Maybe it's a sci-fi story.
Before A Game of Thrones, he was working on a science fiction novel called Avalon. And man, I'm really interested in that because he doesn't have too many long-form science fiction stories. Like, there are a few. A Song for Leah is like novel length, and then there's The Armageddon Rag. Not exactly science fiction, but I'd love to see him like go absolutely wild with science fiction, because you can see it like brimming over in A Song of Ice and Fire. He really wants to tell these wacky, out of world stories, and he like includes elements from other science fiction, and he throws Lovecraft in all over the place. I really want to see what it would be like for him to revisit science fiction after all these years.
Number one, I think that would be awesome. I think science fiction has become a little bit too stagnant. Every science fiction work is now basically like The Expanse. It's all this really hard sci-fi. And that's not a bad thing per se, but like...
Are you looking for the pendulum to swing back to the more fantastical stuff?
Yeah, I'm kind of waiting to see how culture will react, because Game of Thrones was the cultural reaction to Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
Right? And I'm waiting to see when the pendulum will swing back. And I don't really think it's going to do that now, especially not with Hot D.
I think you see a kind of minor reaction. I don't know if Brandon Sanderson even cares about Game of Thrones that much. but his work is definitely less in-your-face gritty. I mean, it's not Lord of the Rings in terms of its optimism and...
It's a thesis.
Nowhere near like George's cynicism.
Yeah, like
it's a thesis, antithesis.
I read the first book of the Stormlight Archives. It's not even like bad people. It's mostly just people in bad situations.
Yeah. Whereas George writes people who, you know, he talks about how all the characters are great, but no, there are evil people in his books.
Yeah.
Yeah, obviously.
I mean, Hot Pie is a menace.
Yeah, someone's got to stop that kid.
I keep forgetting that he exists until Callum brings him.
Because his name is Hot Pie.
His name is Hot Pie.
He was born for the role he took.
We just talk about it like it's normal.
Yeah. His parents were like, well, I've got a future planned out for you, buddy boy.
Wasn't it you that was
given to him by the other orphans?
Wasn't it you guys that said Hot Pie is the Shrouded Lord?
I believe I said that in the thumbnail of the fake A Song of Ice and Fire's video.
Oh shit, that reminds me. I need to ask you an important question, Gladys.
Go for it.
Who in Lord of the Rings is a horse?
Oh, hadn't thought about that. Legolas definitely gives me horse vibes.
He definitely has like a speedy element to him. Could be a horse.
Gandalf, clearly.
Is it really?
No, listen. Gandalf
Have
dies.
Have you ever seen Gandalf and Shadowfax in the same place? No.
No, yes, exactly. And this is the reason. Gandalf dies and then comes back as Gandalf the White. And then Shadowfax is introduced into the story.
Shit.
Are you going to say
God.
Yeah, so
Gandalf the White's a new dude.
Yeah, Gandalf the Grey becomes Shadowfax.
Became Shadowfax.
It works. Debate me, coward.
Oh, Lord. Lord of the Rings fans are going to throw a brick through my window.
I think that Lord of the Rings fans typically take things in good faith.
Yeah.
I was talking with another Song of Ice and Fire YouTubist, and there's drama in our community. Like, there's scheming and backstabbing and, you know, it's political intrigue left and right. What? And he's describing to me how Lord of the Rings YouTubers are, and it's like they're all just sitting in a circle, like in a peace ring, all singing in harmony. And it's like, it really reflects the works that we discuss.
Yeah. Game of Thrones is folk. Lord of the Rings is folk music, and Game of Thrones is punk music.
Yeah, it's kind of funny that you mention it, because the Warhammer YouTubers, because I'm a big part of is very reflective. Half the community is like really gay, and the other half are like fascists.
That's the best.
And you find the odd gay fascist.
Yeah, it's like you flip a coin. Is this person trans and they really really like Tyranids for some reason, or are they a fascist and do they really really like Space Marines? And it's hard to tell sometimes.
And there's very little variance from there.
Where is that love story? I need that straight to TV film.
So when someone tells me, oh, that sounds fucking fantastic. when someone tells you that their favorite character is Tywin Lannister, there's one of two possibilities. Number one, you really enjoy the nuanced take on a flawed father and his impact on his children, and you just think he's a wonderfully written character that demonstrates all the flaws of someone who has ultimate power in a kingdom. Option two, you're a fascist.
No, there's a third option. Daddy.
Oh, right, you're addicted to Charles Dance.
Yeah. Daddy
Dance. To be fair, part of the reason why I think a lot of people actually like Tywin is because Charles Dance does a really good job of making him likable. The book version of Tywin is more obviously a bad guy.
Yeah, because the book version of Tywin has, like, inflatable devices on his face that pretend to be mutton chops.
I don't know. Does show Tywin really come off as good or just more like understandable? And he's a lot of fun to watch.
I think he just has a degree of gravitas that makes him like cool to listen to.
He's compelling.
Yeah, I don't think I would describe him as good in any like additional capacity to his literary counterpart.
Yeah, I mean, but like I like Loras from House of the Dragon. I don't think Loras is a good person. I like him because he makes shit happen.
The rat guy.
Yeah. Not the rat guy, the firefly guy. Where are you getting rat from?
Because he wargs all the rats.
Oh, of course. Yeah. No, he wargs all the feet.
He's a greenseer, and he knows about Lemongate.
No, he wargs into all the feet. The toe boy.
Okay, that was,
the toe man.
That was the weird... There's been some weird things on like Game of Thrones TV. That was definitely a weird thing, guys.
People wonder why I haven't made an episode 9 video yet. It's because I'm spending 6 weeks writing up my dissertation on the foot scene.
Studying the scene extensively.
Yeah, really have to understand it from every angle. You know, was Quentin Tarantino involved?
Yeah, was he the guest director?
Did they get Dan Schneider in somehow?
Oh, you made it worse.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, I think Emily... No, wait. Well, Olivia Cooke is way too old for Dan Schneider's interests.
No, yeah, obviously. Yeah. Because she can't feasibly... I didn't know where that sentence was going, but it wasn't a fun place, so let's move on from it.
Industrialization.
Yes.
Valyrian steel, right? So...
It's just Damascus steel, right?
Something that does come up.
Yeah, but no. It's magic.
It's magic.
I mean, it's Damascus steel.
It's magic. Well, it has some properties that Damascus doesn't have, and...
Yeah, it can kill ice zombies, but, like, I don't think you can test that on Damascus steel.
Yeah, that's true. But the thing that's kind of interesting is because the most famous example of, like, an old sword that gets reforged is, you know, Andruel, the Flame of the West, Narsil, right? And that's, like, a big thing that's a token of... symbol of power. It's literally the symbol of the king of Gondor. The Valyrian steel swords are also like noble weapons, are very much associated with
prestigious symbols.
So like the thing that I find interesting is that Martin is more interested in the effect of symbols than in the actual symbols themselves, you know?
Yeah. Power is a shadow on the wall, resides where men believe it resides.
Varys just popped out of the cupboard.
Yeah, sorry, did I just read off your liner notes or something?
That was exactly what it was. You were the secret shadow lord this entire... No, I'm kidding. I'm not real. Callum is the
I'm the wizard in the box. I'm the wizard in the box that Varys brings in from Braavos or whatever.
I reckon it was a blood raven that cut Varys.
Really?
That'd be cool.
Yeah, he could have been the voice.
You know the theory that Varys is a Blackfyre, right?
Yeah,
that's why he shaves his head.
And so he has this story about how he was castrated by someone, someone was a sorcerer. And I'm thinking, what sorcery do we know of who would want to stop Blackfyres from bleeding? And it's pretty obvious that the only one that comes to mind is Bloodraven. I think the voice that Varys heard was Bloodraven's.
Or the Old Gods.
Mm. Yeah. Essentially, in some manners of thinking, those are the same thing. So,
yeah. So the point that I was getting at is that Martin, like, there are many important moments, you know, that actually come into play with Narsil and, you know, Andruel and stuff like that. The sword is important. Aragorn uses it often once he has it. It's basically one of the, you know, most powerful swords ever. The Valyrian steel swords, to me, are an example of, like, we have these powerful things, but they're not like per se. We're not gonna like try to crack the secret of Valyrian steel, because if everyone had a Valyrian steel sword, then you know it would be kind of worthless in a sense. You know?
Yeah.
It's a representation of this idea in technology. Actually, one of the interesting ideas of technology is that the more industrialization you have, a great example of this is Isengard. Isengard has really good material, right? It's actually really strange that they don't beat the Rohirrim, because they have armies of people with plate armor. Now, I know famously, of course, Tolkien was not talking about plate armor. You know, there's like one line in the books that possibly could refer to plate armor. It's not really, you know, a thing. But like, if any faction had like lots of industry, you know, Saruman with his wizard brain and like building factories and stuff like that,
wizard brain,
they should have easily been able to overtake a bunch of guys on horses, you know. But they made the armor and stuff like that incredibly prevalent. And as a result, you know, the average Isengard, Uruk, or whatever, is like a nameless mook. You don't even really get a sense of, you know, the important characters. It's really just Saruman. Whereas, you know, once you once you have like a limited amount of technology, like you want to have to, like, I think a point with Martin is that like you want to have this high technology, but it's limited to a social elite. Whereas, you know, Tolkien doesn't really concern himself with that. You know, the elites don't maintain their power with technology. They maintain their power with other things.
I also like the idea that, you know, in a lot of urban fantasy, they always have something like a fog or whatever that stops humans from seeing all the vampires or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, the concept behind that is always like, because people will convince themselves that something they don't believe exists doesn't exist. And I like the idea that there is no trick to making Valyrian steel. It's just like a specific kind of material that you can't get anymore because it's all on Valyria. And there's no like special blacksmithing skill or spells that you need to weave into it. It's just literally an unobtainable material. But people convince themselves that there's more to it.
That reminds me of the idea that, you know how every dragon rider we know of is a Targaryen or a Valyrian, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What if that's just propaganda? What if it's just like no one else has really even tried?
Yeah. I mean, there's no supporting evidence that they have to be.
There's nothing in their blood that makes dragons like them more. That's kind of insane when you think about it. And like the idea that they literally have dragon blood in their like an old Valyrian got fucked by a dragon, and so all Valyrians have actual dragon blood in their veins. That's kind of fucking weird as well. What if it's just like, no, anyone can ride a dragon, you just have to like kind of know what you're doing.
Yeah, you just have to be good with lizards, man. But no, what you don't understand, Gladys, is that old Valyria was like Death Stranding, where it was just genetic mutation, and then a bunch of ghosts happened, or whatever the fuck happens in Death Stranding, and then they all died.
You're not wrong. There's a lot of talk about human-animal hybrids being formed by the blood magicians of Valyria.
Were a slave race? And then they convinced the people in Westeros that they were nobles.
Oh, you mean like they were a slave race to another even more incestuous...
Like they were the experiments from the blood pits.
I actually really like that.
And then they just like escaped one day, and then they convinced everyone in Westeros, no, we were nobles.
Back in his sci-fi days, George did write about an ancient empire that had slave races of like genetic abominations. Basically, you just described something that he did write, and those races later on in the distant future warred against one another, and humans got caught in the crossfire, as we are wont to do.
Ah, sick.
You know,
George,
it is kind of...
If you need me to do anything, just hit me up. I'm available, man. Just like, send that message through, bud.
It is kind of interesting that, you know, it's famously debated, of course, as to what, like, the orcs are in Lord of the Rings, if they're human elf, like, if they're degraded elves that have then been crossed with humans, and, you know, to what extent is this, like, blood magic, or is there, like, actual interbreeding going on? That's a hotly debated thing. I don't think it's ever really specified in Tolkien's lore. But Martin is really into the whole like human monster hybrid thing. That's like a strange theme. That's a
it
really
pops up all the time. He's really into it.
Have any of you guys played like Phantasy Star, the JRPG?
I've seen videos of it.
So, spoiler alert for Phantasy Star, the Phantasy Star plays like a medieval game, right? You know, you have like little villages and little towns and knights and stuff like that. It turns out that the backstory of the world is that there was a high technology civilization. They were doing like genetic experiments and stuff like that. They caused their own destruction. And, you know, the reveal of the game is you thought this was fantasy, it's actually sci-fi. And then there's like, that's actually a really common theme in a lot of JRPGs, now that I think about it, where you'll be playing the game and suddenly it's all technology.
Mm.
I kind of have to wonder if maybe George's thing is like, you know, there'll be like a place we'll visit to, like under a shy is like a gene lab or something, you know. And
right, so something... George has spoken about this before. In his mind, in his frame of thinking, science fiction and fantasy are the same thing.
Ooh.
Like there's actually no distinction. He just talks about how it's all just window dressing.
Really?
Because technology as portrayed in science fiction, is basically analogous to magic in fantasy. The author can explain it if they want to, or they can just leave it up to it's fucking wacky technology, or it's just, you know, magic, and it just does that. Right, it's entirely up to the author how much of that. Like, it's not inherent to technology that it is, you know, explicable, or that magic isn't. They're the same thing, and so really the only difference is the window dressing.
Yeah, I mean, it is kind of wild that when we hear the word fantasy, we immediately assume like medieval knights and wizards and stuff, when that's not what fantasy means.
No.
Right. Yeah,
and things like Star Wars is—it's like space fantasy. That's what it is.
Yeah, it's literally it's, like 47 Ronin, but in space.
Yeah, only the setting is different.
I would tend to agree with some of that. I think for me the difference is science fiction. One of the central points of a science fiction story is that they use technology to explore social issues. You don't tend to see, like, magic being used, like, what for me something becomes science fiction when technology is used to explore a social issue, and fantasy really stories don't tend to do that.
And I think what you see in George's work is basically that is like he does use technology in a fantasy setting to explore social issues.
Also, first of all, the Lightbringer series uses magic to explore social issues, as does Avatar the Last Airbender.
And I think there's just as much science fiction that is vapid and doesn't explore themes in this way as there is fantasy that,
yeah,
that
like
does,
Warhammer,
you know.
Oh boy. I would
I will fight everyone that's in the Warhammer community.
Avatar was a really good example. I like that.
No, you're right. I'm not like per se disagreeing. I think that The line between magic and technology is a blurry line in some cases. You know, Arthur C. Clarke, you know, any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic. I think it's the way in which that element of society is related back to itself. You know, because when I'm reading Lord of the Rings, I don't think about, you know, how the technology of the world, I don't think about the forging of the ring. None of that really factors in my mind, in an archetypical, you know, fantasy story. There are obviously ways that you can make exceptions, and not every science fiction story is like that. But for me, that's like the dividing line.
Although,
if I had to draw it, I think genres are complicated, right?
I do want to bring up something.
Right, so, this will be very quick.
Go ahead.
The term science fantasy and science fiction, I think some people use these to distinguish between what you're talking about. Like, Star Wars is science fantasy because, like, it's never explored what the social implications of lightsabers existing or warp drives existing in Star Wars means. But in Star Trek, like, that's the entire conceit of the program.
Mm. Yeah.
Right, sorry, Callum.
No worries.
This is not a leftist podcast if we don't talk about genre.
Yeah. So I wanted to bring up a point that I thought of that's probably wrong, but I wanted to float it out there anyway. Do you think that there's a bit of a theme of technology versus magic in Game of Thrones? RE, like the Citadel,
I think it's called,
the Maesters, but also the Wall. Because the Wall is surprisingly technologically advanced. I mean, they have an elevator, they have that huge scythe blade thing. They've got
so fucking cool.
It is, right? But they've got a lot of technological advancements, and they are technically there to fight magic from the north. They end up fighting wildlings a lot, but they're there to fight magic. Mm. That's my point.
So, Gladys, you can probably speak more about this, but like, it is kind of interesting how at the beginning of Game of Thrones, everyone's like very much in disbelief of like magic, and the magic is kind of, excuse me, going from the world.
Yeah.
And then when Dany does the ritual and rebirths the dragons, there's like magic is coming back again. Maybe it's like a cycle where you have cycles in the world where magic is like really powerful and everyone is into magic, and then something will happen and the magic will start to fade, and then everyone will get into technology.
Mercury goes into retrograde.
Where like a celestial body, I think it's a comet that actually isn't. It's like a technological vessel that allows people to do certain things, right? It allows magic to happen. And it passes, you know, it gives you errors of magic and not magic, as you describe, yeah.
Wait.
And the red comet that passes over when Danny does birth the dragons is basically that, because it does herald the rebirth of magic.
But what you're saying is that Mercury does literally go into retrograde and then magic happens.
Yeah, Jupiter goes into Gatorade and so magic can work.
Finally, Venus goes into Uranus and then magic is born.
It's, yeah, you know, I'm always wary of magic versus technology narratives, right? Because there are loads of, if you spend certain times on like certain parts of the internet, you'll see loads of people talking about like an anime called Gate, which is really, do you guys know it?
Nope. I know Steins Gate.
Okay, so Gate, which is not Steins Gate, is about what if the Japanese military was transported to a fantasy world and they just destroy everything.
Yes.
Yeah, what if? Yes. What if? Yeah, what I wonder.
What if? For the military, from which period?
So, what?
Like modern
from,
period?
Like the 21st century. Yeah, 21st. So you have like an F-35 bombing a dragon and guys lining up in like a phalanx and they all just get gunned down because...
I mean, obviously. Bibbidi yeah, bobbidi blah. Strange.
Hang on, I want to know where the mind came from to get to the question, what if the Japanese military in a situation where it just won the war?
Yeah, what if war was really easy?
What leads a person to asking that question?
No, you know what, so it is. It's someone was doodling one day and they doodled an F-16 bombing a dragon and they were like, I have to make this. This has to exist.
So here's the... I'm just going to read you the first line of the plot, all right? And okay, so in modern-day Tokyo, a portal from another world suddenly appears and a legion of Roman-styled medieval soldiers... That's a very limited sentence. And monsters emerge to attack the city. Using modern weaponry and tactics, the Japanese self-defense force easily repels the enemy and passes through the gate to establish a forward operating base... in the other world.
This is a horror story. Can you imagine if there was a sci-fi story where aliens invaded and then we kicked their asses and invaded them back? What an insane premise.
Yeah, that's War of the Worlds.
Are you serious?
So it's... Well, yeah, in the sequel to the War of the Worlds, we invade Mars.
Are you kidding me?
No, actually, we reverse...
Yeah, Socialist King H.G. Wells was into war games, I might add. He wrote the sequel, and in the sequel, mankind reverse engineered the Martian technology, and then we go and invade Mars, and then we do the colonialism.
And then that starts the John Carter series.
So, Gate is a strange anime, and, you know, a lot of people say it's too political, and it glorifies the Japanese military, and... Like, you flip a coin whenever you find a Gate fan. I'm not a fan of this anime. I just know it because of, like, the very weird discourse around it. And, like, you flip a coin, and they're either, like, a hardcore, like, nationalist who really... The medieval world is really just a metaphor for, like, I don't know, some undeveloped nation, you know?
America.
Or you get people who... Yeah, or you get people who are, like, really strange about the fact that, yes, obviously artillery and tanks and stuff like that would destroy... You know, people who don't have like plumbing. There's a whole genre of media about people trying to ask about who would win, modern technology or magic. And obviously, I very much think the answer is technology, you know, because they're like wizards and they're trying to cast a spell and then they just get hit by like a.
Okay, who would win? Airstrike. The US military or one of every Pokemon?
Every Pokemon, because they some of them can do a move called Earthquake.
But what about the drones?
The flying types. Electricity is strong against flying types.
Ah, there you go.
Some of them are literal gods. Some of the Pokemon. They invented time.
The US military owns many hundreds of nuclear missiles.
Yes.
Cool. Can we nuke God to death? Let's find out.
That's every JRPG. But isn't there a theory that all the Pokemon world is also post-apocalyptic, and like all the Pokemon are like mutated or Pokemon something.
Pokemon theories are really fun because it's clear, it's always been clear to me that there's no, care given to the consistency of the lore. Like, that's just not at the forefront of the game developers' minds. So anything that you come up with is, just you're scrambling together bits of shit on the floor that were never intended to be parts of a jigsaw puzzle, but you're pretending that they are.
Okay, I have two things I need to say.
It also describes the Game of Thrones community.
So I was like, on the topic of JRPGs first, I would love it so much if it turns out that George actually has never read H.P. Lovecraft, but has played a shit ton of Earthbound. And he's just like, he thought that wasn't respectable enough, so he's like, no, yeah, H.P. Lovecraft, of course. Mm-hmm. The second one is, I was at Magic last night.
I wouldn't be surprised.
I was playing Magic last night with some of my friends, and I got a notification on my phone from a parody Game Freak Twitter account. And the tweet was, yeah, in the next Pokemon game, you can fuck them. The best thing is, if you go on their profile, it says, parody account, makers of Pokemon, stop DMing us your art, this game is for children.
Yeah, Twitter was a mistake.
No, it wasn't.
Maybe,
that was
maybe
perfect.
Tolkien was right. Maybe industrialization has consequences of interdisciplinary.
I did
want to ask, Gladys, do you think that on the whole, Martin has a negative or positive view of technology? As manifested in A Song of Ice and Fire. Because I don't think he... My own personal feeling is that he doesn't really care. I think he thinks that it's not really important about the actual technology. What's more important is how the technology gets used.
Yeah.
But I could see arguments either way, actually, because I could see the Valyrians as a metaphor for, rampant industrialization. I've seen people talk about how the White Walkers are a metaphor for climate change,
Yeah, I think it's more important to him where, who the power of technology belongs to. Something interesting about George's life is that his family used to be quite wealthy factory owners in New Jersey. And then by the time he was young, they had lost the factory, and he walked past it every day on his way to school. And every day he saw this reminder of the technology and the power that his family had from it that they no longer have.
He and Lovecraft have that in common.
Does that tell you something about how the way he might view technology across the series?
Yeah, I think that's probably a good way of sort of representing it. Because for me, the central thesis of his entire work is that you've got to be really careful about who's in control and why they're in control.
Yeah, yeah,
and
it doesn't matter if what. Especially strongly when he's talking about magic, because magic, the prophecy is a nasty whore who's going to bite your dick off, right? I think that's what Mr. Marwin says. And it's the same thing of magic, right? It's a fire you can't control.
Magic is just a Faustian bargain at the end of the day.
Yeah.
It is.
It does seem that way, especially when you look at Stannis.
Yeah. Yeah. There's poor Stannis in the show. By virtue of the fact that he's really. Sorry. I was saying poor Stannis in the show. By virtue of the fact that.
The Manus.
D&D when you ask them about Stannis.
He was the one who was leaning against that tree that Brienne was trying to cut down.
Oh God. Even the cutaway death. Oh my god. And then she faced the consequences. Oh no. He just walks away and dies.
He died, my lord. Off screen.
Thank you.
Oh shit, that was your joke. God damn it.
Yes, it was.
you see, there's nothing new in this world. There are always influences and allegories.
Yeah. Yeah, everything's a remix.
Okay, so keeping in mind that, Martin obviously is haunted by the specter of industrial capitalism and the hollowing out of America's industrial base, but what do you think his ideal society is like, right? Because in Tolkien's ideal society is the Shire, and it's very clear that that's why he chose to end on the scouring of the Shire as like the point, you know, of the Lord of the Rings, of the whole thing. And Martin has said that when he ends the series, it will have that kind. He's been, you know, using that point as kind of a reference. He keeps reading it, you know, he says that he reads it. Like, so where do you think his ideal society will go? Because clearly Westeros is not a place. I can imagine the Shire being the Shire forever. I don't know if Westeros could do that forever. You know, either they're going to regress or they're going to progress. But where do you think Martin wants the things to go in his mind?
I mean, Winterfell?
I guess Winterfell is portrayed as pretty idyllic at the start of the series.
Yeah, because nothing particular, like the worst thing at Winterfell at the start of the series is Jon's relationship with Catelyn. But even that is kind of sort of like as long as you're not in my way, I won't be in your way kind of thing. You know,
and it's very circumstantial, but I think like on a societal level,
Dawn?
George is a hippie, and yes. he's a crazy whack job libcuck hippie, and yeah, the way he writes about Dawn, it does seem like he values their more liberal ideas. And then there's that section in The Dance of the Dragon, House of the Dragon, spoilers coming up, where have you guys both read Fire and Blood?
Yep.
No, but right, I've cool. watched, like, enough videos on it.
Right, yeah. What am I talking about? You're both me watchers. where there's three competing kings in King's Landing, the Moon of Three Kings. And one of the kings has two mums, and they use him as like a figurehead to institute strong welfare policies across King's Landing, right? I'll put beer in the drinking taps and, you know. And then afterwards, the king who comes out as king after the war, he befriended this kid, and his policies are informed by the prosperity. I mean, it was a terrible time, of course, because King's Landing was at war with itself during that month.
Mm-hmm.
But the policies stayed with him. Like, I think, what's the quote? He says that his policy is like bread and it's like full bellies dancing bears. Like, he doesn't care about anything beyond that. Bread and circuses. Yeah. He just wants to keep the people happy and fed. And
well, the small... No, go ahead.
Yeah, George is definitely... he likes good kings. You know, he writes very glowing stuff of Jaehaerys in Fire and Blood, the conciliator who built a shit ton of infrastructure across Westeros and expanded the rights of small folk and women, mostly at the behest of his wife, but we'll leave that aside for now. Egg is viewed as a good king, and
right,
you know,
up
all
until
the
end.
Good kings, yeah. all of his good kings, quote unquote, you know, people who care for the small folk. Egg famously spent time among the small folk. He was, you know, raised as a hedge knight.
Fagon or Yongryth.
Yep.
Quick. Do you believe that Young Griff is actually a Blackfyre, or do you believe he's actually a Targaryen?
I really hope he's not Rhaegar's son.
Interesting.
He's the Shrouded Lord.
Okay.
He's Geryon Lannister's son.
I think it's more fun if he's like just a random Lysenny peasant than if he's actually a Targaryen.
So, because, you know, that's actually the first time someone's pointed that. I think the two competing theories is that he's either a Blackfyre or he's the Targaryen. He could just be some random guy. In which case, Varys is like the ultimate Infinity D chess player, you know?
Infinity D.
Because, you know,
I'm a child.
Lys is, you know, crawling with people who just look completely Valyrian, right? And always has been. So people there are just going to look like Targaryens, so yeah, you can just do that.
Yeah, Hot D shows us Aegon's, like, kid in the fighting... he has, like,
oh,
a...
Oh, yeah, no, there is like Targaryen blood child. Going around, yeah.
They're just...
That was a rough scene.
Yeah. Look, the show is a little bit wild, but, you know, I would tend to think, like, one of the big issues, to bring a little bit of Marxist analysis here, right? So, you know, one of the big problems with thinking about social societies and things like that is, you know, we have to talk about, like, the material conditions of a society, and those material conditions will dictate what kind of society you will have. And one of the problems is we're talking in Lord of the Rings and in A Song of Ice and Fire, we're talking about two societies that are basically run on feudalism.
Yep.
And... In the case of Game of Thrones, like, that feudalism was enforced by magic, by nukes, dragons, essentially. Flying nukes for hundreds of years. And, I guess somehow they must have also made the dragons warg-proof, because no one ever wargs into a dragon that I know of.
It seems to me as though dragon riding is warging.
But also, no one can, like, warg into a dragon.
Doesn't the Night King warg into a dragon?
Don't bring up.
You know, after he, like, pro-lances it out of the sky, in accordance with his dragoon features.
You see, this works because the Night King is a Targaryen.
Yeah, he's
Viserys.
I've seen articles published since House of the Dragon's been airing about how Daemon is the Night King and how Aemon is the Night King. It's like, are you fucking... Because, like, I famously made that shit post where I say that Rhaegar is the Night King. And, like, it's, like, the most obvious joke. Like, I can't believe anyone would ever seriously suggest anything like this. And here we are. It's actually happening.
Mm. Especially since it's clearly Viserys, because Viserys got the head shape to be the Night King when he got the gold poured over him.
Would work.
When I was reading the game with the owners... Wait, no. When I was reading the Song
does
of...
He ride Viserion.
Yes, exactly. When I was reading the...
We haven't seen the Night... Oh, sorry. We haven't seen the Night King play with a tiny miniature model of Okay, no, go ahead, Gallum.
So when I was reading A Song of Ice and Fire and I saw that Viserys had died, and then later on when all of those mercenary companies are going to Meereen, I think it is, to like offer their aid to Dany, and I heard about the tattered prince, I was like... Viserys? Did you somehow survive?
In front of her.
But, like, did you somehow survive? Because wasn't that his name when they were kids? Like, people used to call him, like, the Prince in Rags
something? He was the Beggar King.
Yeah, so I was like, the tattered prince. You know?
So one thing that really... Okay, one thing that really differentiates Lord of the Rings from Game of Thrones is that, generally speaking... When someone dies in Lord of the Rings, unless they're like a divine person, they stay dead. And no one's like a secret person. No one's like a pretending to be a...
Aragorn was like a Sauron. Secret king?
You know what I mean, right? No, Aragorn doesn't pull his face off and he was secretly someone else, you know, this entire time. I feel like one of the problems with Game of Thrones, or maybe this is just because we haven't had a lot of resolution, is... The fact that it's easy for people to pretend that, oh, someone just faked their death, or we didn't see them die, so they're still alive, or it wasn't this person, it was that person, or George deliberately has, like, some people who are pretending to be other people, and that means that anyone can be anyone, someone's a horse, you know?
Although, I will say that Gandalf does have that one incredibly famous shitpost where he pretends to be Saruman in the woods and then blinds his friends with a fucking solar flare.
What a dick.
He's just like screwing with them at this point.
Hey, Pip. Fuck you.
Hey, Aragorn, Gimli, the other one. Fucking check this out. Throws hood off, is the sun.
Look, he's an angel that basically has PTSD, so... Yeah.
He's not. He's an angel that plays pranks on people.
He can do both, but...
Like George Clooney.
Yeah,
he's George Clooney. He's an old man that pranks... the best line in BoJack Horseman is like, he's not God, he's just an old man that plays pranks on people. And it's like, that sounds like God.
It's I kind of have to wonder, because the other the parallel that I was going to bring up with like the ideal future society and material conditions is feudalism doesn't allow for a lot, because anyone that tries to rebel against the system, you can kind of easily kill them and basically put them down, and a lot of the time you have very overlapping interests of people that, you know, oppress the proletariat, if you really want to call them that. They're not really the peasantry. In the sequel to The Lord of the Rings, one of the central points is that the kingdom had basically had loads of peace. People don't really even think of orcs as existing anymore. The magic is kind of going out of the world. The kings have basically not really had a strong hand on the ship. And everything's kind of become decadent and fallen and... society is crumbling, and then people are looking for a revolution. So people form a cult to worship Melkor or Sauron, and that's kind of like a proletarian struggle in a way, because the people who do a lot of the rebelling are all the people who were traditionally oppressed by Gondor, outside of the context of fighting the War in the Ring. And I kind of have to wonder if, like, we projected the future timeline of Game of Thrones into the future, you know, maybe there would have been some kind of development, maybe an industrial revolution of some kind. Although I don't really think so. I feel like the world is so empty and destroyed that it's really a miracle that we've even got what we have, you know?
So what you're saying...
Are you talking about, like, show Game of Thrones, like from Daenerys's Burning of King's Landing?
No, what I mean is, like, so you've talked about how the theory is that, like, the world is already post-apocalyptic and the world is full of ruins and things like that.
Yeah.
I kind of really struggle to imagine there being an industrial revolution in Westeros, you know? Something that, like...
Well, yeah, that's the thing, is that Westeros has been in basically the same technological place for the past, like, 8,000 years.
Yeah. Yeah, which is crazy. Because
they keep getting destroyed.
Yeah.
Maybe that's it. Like, the reason why technological development doesn't happen is because they keep getting destroyed. In Tolkien's work, technological development was happening, right? The people were developing in the shadow. That's kind of what caused the crisis of meaning. Jordan Peterson would have had a field day with that book. I'm kind of glad Tolkien decided it was too boring
to
write.
Bring me an army worthy of Mordor.
Goodness. Goodness.
You know, I saw a fan edit of like Dune where they had replaced Paul with Elmo. I really want to see that with Hermit. You know, there's like that scene with him in the Bene Gesserit, and it's like Elmo is like, Elmo, put your hand in the box, and it's like, Elmo, no one.
Oh my god, this is incredible.
I don't know if we're ever gonna meet Grover Tully, but if we do, his first line needs to be a Grover quote.
It is kind of
somehow.
I don't know if we'll meet Grover, but we'll definitely meet some of his family members. Who also have fun names.
Yeah, I think there is Martin... an Elmo.
Yeah, there is an Elmo Tully.
And then there's Animal.
Kermit and Oscar.
There's Animal Tully.
So Grover's, in the book it's his grandson, but I think in the show it might be his son. It's not entirely clear yet. Mm. Is Elmo, and then he has two sons called Kermit and Oscar.
That's so good. I love George.
And they do. They're not minor characters. Like, they show up in the book.
Yes.
Yeah, you know.
They're riding, like, woolly mammoths. That go fucking nuts.
See, I don't think Tolkien would have done something like that. But
I'm going to tear you a new asshole.
You're really good at voices, Gladys.
No, just that one.
This is Sesame Street cast.
I deeply hope we meet Oscar and someone calls him a grouch. That would make my day.
Oh god, I hope so.
they have to stare directly. They have to like cut to like a trash can.
They cut to they cut to
the
like.
First time you see him is climbing out of the trash.
We visit Kermit. We visit Elmo Tully, and like Kermit's playing with a frog, and Oscar's climbing out of the trash.
Going to Kermit suicide.
It ain't easy being
okay,
green.
Well, oh man,
industrialization, Marxism. Yeah.
Yes,
Marxism. Yeah. Well, you know, it's hard to imagine. You know, because the other problem is that. When you want to start thinking, like, one of the reasons why people did a revolution, really, against the ruling elite was that they began to see themselves as a collective people. You know, they had a class consciousness. Proletarians, right? All the workers, you know, they all have the same interest. One of the problems, I think, that would go against that is basically everyone hates every other ethnic group. and like different houses and
Westeros
stuff. There's so
is
much
too racist to do leftism.
Yes. I mean, yeah. Kind
yeah.
of.
Yeah, no, I see what you're saying.
Yeah, they're so divided. They hate each other so much, you know? It's like, I have a hard time imagining, because I picture this, guys. There's like a Westerosi Industrial Revolution, you know? There are some like, let's say guys, Tullys, Riverlanders or whatever, who are like trying to organize a union in their factory that makes sheep or whatever. And then the boss is like, you know, these guys, we don't really like them. Let's just bring over some cheap Stark labor and as scabs, you know, and then they just hate each other and they start fighting. Yeah, Crannog men. Exactly, right? Everyone hates everyone. There's like such a strong animus between people.
Hey,
that
oh,
seems to
Jaehaerys, how's the factory going?
They bring the mountain in as a union buster.
Yeah. Yeah.
I do want Industrial like, yeah. Revolution era Game of Thrones now.
That's just Arcanum, my man.
Tywin is like Arcanum. A steampunk robber baron.
He's got the Al Capone suit, and he's got like a cigar, and just lights up and shows his face in the dark.
If any character could work in steampunk, I think it'd be. Yeah, I could see Charles. But if any character works in steampunk, it's 100% Tyrion, right? Like Tyrion is like a Dickensian, you know.
Oh, he so is, yeah.
Yeah, he's just like a classic urchin type character. And okay, look, we need to forget about the Winds of Winter, and what we need is a
the smokes of Stacks.
Steampunk. Yeah, we need to start funding that, because what hasn't happened, unfortunately, because I'm a big steampunk person, and steampunk just hasn't managed to break out into the mainstream media, you know.
We've had a couple of attempts. It almost did once, yeah.
It almost did once, and it never did again. And every time they make a steampunk movie, I get excited, and it's terrible. You know, the Mortal Engines one, that was bad.
I mean, Bioshock did a good job, but that was also kind of more art deco. Than like Victorian
steampunk.
Yeah. It's kind
BioShock
of steampunk.
100% art.
It's bubble
not
punk.
Really.
It's bubble
it's
punk.
It's art deco. It's new. It's more diesel punk
it's
than anything.
It's bubble
else.
Punk.
Guy, just back me up.
Bubble punk.
I haven't played any of the BioShock games.
Oh, you
all I know is that the time travel in Infinite is kind of fucked up.
It's actually
okay, yeah.
It's not
okay,
terrible, but it is kind of stupid.
It's very dumb.
They never explain why Comstock is racist.
He's like a white guy in 20s America.
Yeah, doesn't really need an explanation.
But Booker isn't racist, and they're the same person.
Yeah, true. That is an important distinction.
They both fought in the war, and then like the timeline deviated when Booker decided, you know what, I'm okay with brown people. Whatever.
Yeah, I remember this from the Matthew Matosas video.
The first BioShock for me will always be the best one. There's a video on this channel about that. I talked to a philosophy PhD.
I watched some of that.
Oh, hey. You did?
Yeah, I checked the podcast out before I accepted the invite.
Smart.
Yeah,
smart move.
You did your homework. You saw the dumpster. You saw Callum and I arguing. And like, yeah, these guys seem like they're fun to talk
yeah,
to.
Yeah, sure, that seems fine. Yeah, why not?
Meet Wally.
Before we've pretty much, I think, talked the subject. One of the nice things about doing a podcast is we have no script. We don't have to
end whenever we want. We can talk over each other. We don't have to stick on topic at all. I want an image of the hound holding up their chicken and says, "Behold a man."
Oh, that's good.
I also want a workplace comedy of people working in a Valyrian blood pit.
Okay, but Plato was a wrestler, so I will... Plato comes from the word plaison, which means wide or broad. So
Have I told you my Plato theory?
What's your Plato theory?
When I was in university, a friend of mine and I discovered that Plato was an Olympic-level wrestler, so we came up with a theory that he wasn't a philosopher. He just beat up the weaker philosophers into writing philosophies for him and then submitted it under his name.
Do my homework, nerd.
Yeah, exactly. I love that. I think he beat up Socrates, and and they had to compete with each other. Life is good.
I could see that happening.
Anyway,
so before we end, it's obligatory if you ask a Game of Thrones YouTuber to come on this show. Gladys, who are your favorite characters from Game of Thrones and also Hot D?
Shitmouth.
Oh, classic. Yeah, I remember him.
Biter.
Really?
Biter,
yeah. Fan of Biter, yeah. The first Reek.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah, that's a contentious...
Gordon Ramsay.
I can see that. Yes.
Gordon Ramsay Bolton.
Yeah. Yeah, he would...
No, actually, big softy spots for... Jimbo.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, I should call people by their actual names. But Jamie. I have a video about how much I love Catelyn. Catelyn, I have videos about lots of things.
People who hate Catelyn Stark, I think, are really missing the point. You know.
Yeah, pretty cringe. In terms of main characters, let's frame it like this: who am I most excited to read more about in the Winds of Winter? Sam for plot reasons, but also I like Sam.
Let's I face like... it, we're all basically Sam.
Euron?
Euron is super exciting. I want to hear more about Euron. In the same way I want to hear more about Corlys. So I really want to just hear more about his life.
I heard the Corlys prequel show is cancelled, unfortunately.
Oh.
Yeah,
I'm sure
that's
it'll resurface again at some point.
Yeah, I think HBO is in a weird situation where Hot D is doing well, but they're still not necessarily making all that much money, you know?
Yeah.
So
did you hear that the Jon Snow show is apparently going to fix some of the problems with season 8? Which is
I cannot believe it.
No, don't do that. Make a Jon Snow show where he's just a buddy cop with
Tormund, absolutely.
Tormund.
Yeah, and they just go around north of the wall solving crimes. It's like Scooby-Doo, but
yeah, Ghost fantasy. Is there.
Yeah.
Run.
Scooby-Doo would be better if
Ghost. Who wants a ghost snack?
it's just someone's
Scooby-Doo
foot.
Scooby-Doo would be... Oh, man, I would love Scooby-Doo if Shaggy could walk to Scooby. Maybe he does. Maybe that's why he's so hungry.
Oh, are you talking about the famous Scooby-Doo movie Shaggy the Werewolf?
Drift into the mind of the Great Dane. He just smokes enough weed that it goes into Scooby's head.
I'm 100% sure there was a body swapping one at one point.
Okay, so the other question that we have to ask is, which character in Game
Viserys,
of Thrones?
Viserys, Danny's brother Viserys. That is my favorite character. Sorry, continue.
Which character are you most like?
My most like.
Which character would you be, basically, if you were a character? Because Callum is Hot Pie. I'm Cyrio Forel.
With
Sansa. Who are you?
There's a brother of the Night's Watch who dies six different ways. And Ed describes him as lucky, and I think that's me.
Yeah, I do want to say I would either be Hot Pie or Ed. But
Ed. He's so fun.
I say Hot Pie because I have a similar build to him, and I too enjoy pastries.
I say Sirio because I do actually teach people to sword fight. So
That's fucking sick.
Yeah, that's
yeah,
how we
yeah,
met.
I have a Hema club.
Dude.
Yeah, I got Kalima Kopesh.
Yeah, just nice. Out of the blue for no reason. Bought me a Kopesh.
I have a lot of fencing friends.
Oh, nice. Well, you have one more.
Nice.
And yeah, that would be me. I know the guy who made Sirio's wooden sword.
That's awesome.
Whoa. Yeah. Really?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
He's a cool guy.
As long as we're bragging. My sister has met Robert Sheenan.
When?
Yeah. She's the third assistant director on a lot of movies.
I told this story publicly? I once met who was the other guy? It was Stephen Fry. He was having coffee with
Hugh Laurie?
No, not Hugh Laurie. I don't know if they've appeared together publicly in the past 30 years.
I mean, fair enough.
It was someone like unremarkable for me, but like who played in Pirates of the Caribbean? Davy Jones.
Oh, Bill Nighy.
Bill Nighy?
No, Bill Nighy.
Was it?
Yeah, the science guy.
Hang on. I'm thinking of a different guy. So...
Yeah, he's the guy who plays Pirates. He's also in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Jeffrey Rush.
Jeffrey Rush.
Yeah, Rush. So Stephen Fry and Jeffrey Rush. Jeffrey Rush lives around... I went to school in a place that Jeffrey Rush was just around all the time. Not saying, like, he lurked out the front of the school. No, like...
Jeffrey Rush is in the yard again, folks. We have to get him out.
In the middle of a city, and, like, we would walk around the city, and he also existed in the city. You would just sometimes see Jeffrey Rush around. But I saw Stephen Fry having coffee with him at a cafe, and I was like, holy shit, it's Stephen Fry. And he got on the same tram as me, and I was just, you know that, if you guys watched Community, when Troy meets LeVar Burton, and he's just making that stunned, that was me.
I asked for a picture. You can't disappoint a picture.
Yeah, that was me. I also once called King Charles a wanker in his own presence.
Oh, good.
To be fair, Gladys, that was us when this conversation started.
Yeah, I mean, who's the king now? Who's the
king
man
Charles.
Queen?
It's King Charles.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
Chucky.
Yeah.
He's the Chucky sausage hands.
He's not well, right, guys? Like, if we're going to take away anything from Game of Thrones, is that monarchs are all weird people, and nothing is better proof of that than
that
the actual monarchs.
Weird. He looks like a possum.
Have you seen, he's funding the construction of a new town in, where, I think it's like in Dorset somewhere. And it's like, he hates modern architecture, so it's like, he's building a Lego town to appease his fetish for old-timey architecture. It's very strange. He's a strange man.
That's so
good.
Relevant
to the Tolkien discourse.
Yeah.
It's nature versus industry yet again.
And that's... We're professionals. We were able to bring it back. Okay.
Yeah.
Gladys, why don't you tell our viewers at home where they can find you?
You can find me late at night... When you're thinking about the things that matter, search inside your heart and you'll find me.
Cool, but like on this
YouTube
website?
Or you can go to youtube.com/c/Gladys, where I sometimes upload videos when the rent is due. You will notice that I have a very erratic landlord.
For now.
I was desperately fighting myself to not cut in with erotic, and then Emilio delivered the spiciest line of "for now" that I've ever heard in my life. So this is a weird energy to end the show on.
That's the Bites Mark magic.
That's not the name of our show.
This is not a Valyrian.
Do you want to take another take at that?
It's the Bite Mark's magic.
There we go.
My brain is starting to dribble out of my ears. All right. This has been a lot of fun. You can find our socials in the links below. Gladys will be linked in case you don't want to manually type out the address.
Six whole letters. Holy crap. What do you expect of people?
I mean, it's...
We'll put an annotation, yeah, I think, as well. Join our Discord. Lots of fun stuff is happening. We have cool people who make
don't
cool
join
art.
My Discord. It's a bad idea.
No, join his Discord. It's great. I'm on it.
Yeah.
I don't read any of the messages, but it's comforting to have something that gets notifications sometimes.
True, true, true.
Yeah, you know, subscribe. Get him to 100,000 so that...
eat that book.
Yeah, exactly. I want to watch him eat a book. Do it.
Sometimes I think about, like... Oh, yeah, true. Subscribe to them.
Sometimes
I think about the actual physicality of getting that book in my mouth and, like, why did I ever even think to say that I would do that? That's such a terrible idea.
Well, you never said how you'd prepare it, so I just imagined you'd make, like, a soup.
Oh, I'm going to have a lot of fun with it.
You see, prophecy, Gladys.
The problem is that the human digestive system isn't built to handle cellulose.
Is that
which, it'll go right through
to
you.
My understanding, paper is mostly cellulose.
But also, there's a lot of ink that you're going to be eating.
A lot of ink, and ink is also not what the human digestive system is built for.
I really deeply hope you know EMT.
Maybe what we could do is you could, like, boil the book and melt, get the ink to run off the pages, maybe, or something like that, and then try eating it.
But that's a cop-out. At that point, like, why not just use cellulase to break down the cellulose into glucose and just give that a go?
What you should do is stream it and have your lawyer in the background updating your will every 5 pages.
I'm definitely going to make content out of this.
The content machine must flow, and this video will probably be out. Check out our other stuff. We have things coming. And yeah, thanks everyone for joining us. Thanks again for Gladys.